Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome, folks. Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Happy Sunday. You're going to have a wonderful week. I know you are. This is 97.9 The Hill, the very best radio station in the state of North Carolina. And this is the show. Exploring Your Creative Genius is the show that believes that creativity is so important that I refuse to define it for you. I want you to have your own understanding of what it means to be creative. And so the way I help you accomplish that is by giving you lots of thoughts from me, but also lots of ideas from guests. And we have a wonderful guest today. Today's guest is the acclaimed poet Judith Pact. And let me tell you how acclaimed she is. Back in 2011, she won one of the Penn Prizes for the Western Region for her poetry collection, Summer Hunger. She's been nominated three times for the prestigious Pushcart Award. I have right here in my hand, here in the studio, along with my dog Flicka, I have the most recent collection of her poetry titled Precarious. I've read about half the poems in this book, folks, and Judith has rapidly become one of my very favorite poets. I highly recommend the book. When I asked Judith to share a line with me that I could use to share with you all, folks, she said that she writes to explore what she doesn't understand but feels passionately about in the moment. Judith, welcome. Thanks for coming on the show. I hope you're doing well today.
Hi, Carl. Thank you. And thank everybody for listening. Yes.
Is there anything? Go ahead.
So shall we talk a little about where I came from?
Yes, please.
My mother played the piano. We would stand around the piano, my family and I, and sing everything, but ballads. And of course, ballads are part of poetry too. It's a good beginning. And we read Kipling, among other things. We read, when we were very young, A.A. Milne, who also wrote Now We Are Six and a million other things, Winnie the Pooh. So this is all part of my background.
And where were you? Where in the country did you grow up?
I grew up in Manhattan.
Okay.
And you can hear it in my accent. Yeah. And the Kipling was interesting because I identified with the elephant's child, and I was the elephant's child, hitting my aunts and uncles with my trunk. It gave me a sense of empowerment as a child. It was my identification. And, you know, everything, if you reread Kipling, you know, it's politically incorrect now.
Yes.
But it was so great to grow up with, and not the politically incorrect part. I wasn't aware. But that was what helped to form me. Little did I know.
Well, I was such a nature boy growing up that I couldn't help but be a big fan for Jungle Book as a child. But yes, I hear your appreciation and your criticism of Kipling for sure.
And I had one other thing I do want to say. I had a very influential teacher in English at my school, which was the Ethical Culture School. It was the upper school. It was the Fieldston School. And he asked us to write poems, and he called me in to hear my poem, which was, by the way, a terrible poem. But it did raise issues within me of what it was I was writing about, and that stayed with me all my life. His name was Elbert Lenro. Yes, he was a great teacher.
Well, thanks for acknowledging him. We should be acknowledging those teachers that have had impact on us whenever we have the opportunity to do so. You said something about your first poems weren't very good. I don't think I'm making this up. I think I have heard or read a poet saying something like, you got to write a whole lot of really bad poems early on to get them out of the way.
Is that? I think you always do. I mean, I don't know about early on. I think I still do. I mean, I think the shaping of a poem when you finally have one is part of the inventive process. I don't use the word creative. I think it's more about invention. But I love the I love the editing. That's a major part of what I write. Yeah, what I do when I've written, and I throw out a lot too.
Well, when I have artistic creators as guests on the show, I frame the distinction between Pablo Picasso and Paul Cézanne's creative processes, and these are their own understandings. This is not other people applying this thought to them. They claim this themselves, that Picasso would insist that he would never start until he knew how he was going to end, whereas Cézanne insisted that he just got started and he would discover what it was that he was going to do. Do either of those fit anywhere close to how you see your creative process, or do you have any comments on either of those gentlemen's creative process?
Well, I honor both great, great painters and sculptors and cutters
and everything. Creators, right.
Cézanne would be what I don't really know what the end is going to be, because I write a lot from the unconscious. And so I find something that I've hooked onto for whatever reason. And then by the end of the poem, I probably learn about myself and I learn what it is that I'm writing about.
Well, I love this line that you asked me to share with the folks, and let's double back on it, that you write to explore what you don't understand.
Yes.
And when I got that line from you, I thought, that's a wonderful way to describe the impetus to engage in creative process, right? You're trying to understand something.
I think that's honest. I mean, I think, yes, I'm always searching. My son once said that about myself, which is a great compliment, because your own kids don't normally compliment you. Yeah, I think that's part of my process of actually living. It's writing, but it's also, I try that in my life. It seems to work. I've got good kids. Something worked, I don't know. Probably genetics, yeah. But anyway, I think it's discovery and openness and being willing to change and move. That's all part of it.
Well, as I tried to understand creativity in such a way that I could help other people understand it better, I remember one of the early, I considered it to be a success in my understanding, was to understand that yes, indeed, often we are creating, but very, very often we are discovering.
Yeah.
Very often we're discovering, and I love that discovery process.
And I think it's the same thing. I think it's different words for the same thing in many ways. I mean, if you're really free and you can really do that. The process of writing is, I know friends of ours who are, professional psychologists or analysts, psychoanalysts, are really fascinated in the connection between what we write and our creative process.
Yeah.
Let me
ask you if we can just pause for a moment. We'll pick that back up. We're gonna take a break here, but Judith will be here when we come on back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back, folks. The first segment of the show, you met Judith Pacht, an acclaimed poet. I'm going to confess it again, and delighted to confess it, in fact. I'm going to proclaim it, in fact, that Judith has become one of my favorite poets. I've really loved reading poems from her new book, Precarious. And Judith, you were talking about an interesting insight into the creative process when we broke. Let's hear you talk a little bit more about that. And then, folks, we're going to ask Judith to start to read some of her poetry for us.
Well, it's just the interest of friends who happen to be in the world of psychology, who are psychoanalysts. And they are already wanting to explore what is the jump between reality and the creative process. And I walk away from that because I think what's important is to not, as Picasso did, if I could only be a Picasso, right? But as Picasso did, I don't want the end. I don't need to know what the end is. I need to discover it.
Yes.
And in fact, the first poem that I'd like to read when I do read is about that process.
Well, let's do that. Judith is going to read at least a couple of poems for us today, folks. And so, Judith, why don't you go ahead and share the first one that you'd like to share with us? I look forward
first
to hearing
one
it.
Is a poem that is known as an Ars Poetica, which the poets here will know is a poem about writing a poem, and it's about, in a way, and it's about the process, and you'll find a metaphor at the end, but it is the process. So if you can think of it that way, it's called Untied. Scraps collected, saved, and shaped to stanzas, or laid out with care on paper, like starched and iron organza, crushed. Oh, those crumpled hours, torn and tossed away. Something might be there. And then, once when I was 3, I tried to tie my shoe, hurled it flying fury against the flowered wallpaper, making bruises of purple petaled flowers. Not so much later, I came to know the shoe's lace better. It's loop the loop, it's up, round, down. And then, the lace and I became a bow. So the bow is the finished poem, if that would be the metaphor. That's it, Carl. That's that poem.
I love it. I love it. I'm clapping. Or I'm snapping my fingers like they do in cool places in Manhattan when a poet is nailed it. That's wonderful. That was wonderful. Thank you so much.
No, that's fine.
Is there something you want to tell, anything more you want to tell us about the poem? Was this a recent one? Is this one that you wrote a while back?
Not that long ago. I mean, this is recent work. So, I'm trying to think when I wrote it. I wrote it within a year.
Okay.
I would say, yeah. I wrote it before the book was published. So the book took about a year. So it was probably a year and a half ago. Yeah, most of this is very contemporary. The writing is contemporary.
Yes.
Even the second part of the book, the first part is new, but the old part, it's not that old. So, but it's poems that were meaningful to me in the second part.
And folks, the book that Judith is referring to is a book I have here in my hands. I've read a third, maybe a half of the poems in it, Precarious. It came out just last year.
It came out in October.
Of 25.
Okay,
yeah. So it's only...
It's a new book.
Not even six months.
And I'm doing there is a lot of PR connected with it, which I'm not so fond of. This is fine, talking to a friend. This is lovely. And I like reading. I love reading my own work. I hate to say that. That's why it's fun. I've just been down from Ventura, where I did a reading, I've been up there twice now for reading. So it's lovely. The reading part is lovely. Setting things up is not my thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I was talking to Marcia de la O, who was a Southern California poet, but I mean, she's a terrific poet. She is a poet who's published in The New Yorker, et cetera, et cetera. And Marcia and I were talking about, neither of us like that. And she said to me, I'm an introvert. And I think I am too. So that's just more discovery that I wasn't even thinking about much.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I love words. I'm a novelist. I love words. I have loved reading poetry. I had forgotten somewhere along the line that poetry needs to be read aloud, right? These words aren't just written words. These words are spoken words. And I remember when I was reminded how important it is to read poetry out loud. It's when I have 3 daughters and I would read them children's books and poetry books as children. And when I would hear myself reading poems aloud, I thought, oh, that's right. Poetry must be read aloud. Do you have any comments about that?
I don't, but the next poem that I wanted to read needs to be read aloud.
Great.
Because sounds in it are critical, but all poetry, as we said, you know, the ballad, the pantoum came from around 800 in 100 BC, I mean AD, in Indonesia. So, I mean, people have been reading and talking about poetry for centuries.
And of course, it began as an oral tradition, and then writing was developed, and so it became also a written phenomenon as well. But again, I just I love reading poetry, but boy, oh boy, do I love hearing poets read their poetry. We only have about a half a minute left in this segment. I bet you we don't have a poem that you can read with and do it justice in that short period of time.
I think we could do it then.
So tell us about the poem you're going to read when we come back for the third segment. What will we be hearing when we come back from the third segment?
We'll be hearing Depression Soup, 1936.
I love this poem, folks. This was the very first poem of Judith's that I read, and when I read that poem, I thought I need to get to know this poet much better because I just love this poem. And so we're going to hear from that poem from Judith, and I think probably another when we come back from the break. So come on back, folks.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. I'm Carl Nordgren, 97.9 The Hill. Our guest today is Judith Pacht, and she read one of her poems. She talked about her poetic life. We're going to fill up this last segment, folks, with Judith reading us a couple of poems. Judith, it's all yours.
Okay, well, this one is Depression Soup, as I think we said. And there, in the end of it, you will hear Mount of Moon and Mount of Venus. And in palmistry, which I looked up, Mount of Moon is an area at the base of the palm opposite the thumb, said to be the source of creativity, moods, and emotions. Mount of Venus, opposite the Mount of Moon, is said to be the source of energy, love, effective, and symmetry. Depression Soup. Grasses tuck, slivered duck, scallions in bowel clouds, orders sing out loud, vowels, treble clatter, roll and rattle, metal carts at Samier's. Right here, mother ladles soup, pot to bowl, noodles tangle in mounds of ancient hen's feet, broth leached and leached, hours and hours from barely bubbling bones. Father's bald head, a brass-globed finial, gleams tall over suit and tie. Starched dinners, mother's ordered breaths, her table set for dining, with me, an animal whose procreant urges, primal, ravenous, sucks belly jelly bits off Mount of Moon, Mount of Venus, my hands, their feet. So this is what we ate, and we did eat it, and I loved it.
Nice. That's wonderful. Yeah, my father was a Depression child, and when I read Depression Soup, I just thought of the experiences that he'd shared with me. They weren't precisely what you're saying, but they certainly were of the same vibe. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to chat more because I want you to see.
This is a sonnet. It ends the book. It was originally a rhyming sonnet, but I changed it. I took it away. I did what Emily Dickinson called slant. So it isn't a regular it isn't a rhyming sonnet, but it is a sonnet. Praise small things. Red clay trade beads in a dreadlock braid. The scent of earth musk after rain. A cicada chorale shrieking in the sun. The summer's chalky grass, oak black shade. Praise the sticky pollen on the bee's hind legs, the blossom's private parts, the fruit. Praise all vowels, masa and matate, smooth and avocado, quesadilla. Praise Nomo backing first base on Beltre's throw. Cohen reaching Ahmed. Ahmed reaching words both used to know. Speaking, speaking. Praise the wild geese rising slow, circling after rain to taste the scent of air, of earth, this earth.
I love that. I do love that. I have this was one that I had read, and I just love everything about it. And it's all I can do as you're reading to keep quiet. I want to exclaim my delight as yes, you are reading, but I'm holding it all back until you finish, folks. You can hear in these three poems that Judith has shared with us such wonderful clarity, such wonderful language, And I have a poet in my family. My eldest daughter is a successful poet. And so for me to say that Judith has become one of my favorite poets is something that I'm going to speak very carefully around my daughter. Judith, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. We've got about a minute left. Is there anything you'd like to share with the audience before we go?
Well, just thank you, Carl, for the opportunity to share this. And encourage anyone who has a pen and a piece of paper to write. And it doesn't have to be for posterity or in a poetry mode. It can be whatever you feel strongly about. That's what I believe in. Let's, get it out, share it.
Yes, please. Thank you for that urging. That's really consistent with the purpose of this show, is that we want to urge people to create. Put your editing, your criticism, self-criticism aside, and just get out there and write. Just get out there and draw. Just get out there and dance. Just get engaged in some creative process, or as you say, Judith, in some inventive process. Well, thank you very much for being here with us today. I appreciate it. Folks, the book is Precarious. As the regular listeners know, on Wednesday in, 4 days, the show will be posted on the Chapelboro website, and I will include links and information about Judith that you can find more information about her and her work. And Judith, again, thank you very much. I hope you have a great week, folks, and I hope, Judith, you have nothing but success with your work.
My pleasure. Thank you, Carl.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.